Basically, it was one where the devil was, like, pretending to be a nun, and she was having, like, hot, salacious lesbian nun sex with the other nun in the movie, and, yeah, that is not what this movie is at all. Hello, it is April 2nd, 2024. My name is Daniel Berrios, and I'd like to welcome you once again to the movies! Thanks for stopping by. Today we are talking about the newest horror film starring Sydney Sweeney, directed by Michael Moen, Immaculate. This one has taken the internet specifically by storm. I feel like every day I see some new piece of social media marketing for this thing. It's a religious horror movie starring Sweeney as an American nun whom, after the, I guess, closure of her church, is recruited by an Italian pastor or an Italian cardinal. I grew up Protestant. I did not grow up Catholic, so I'm not entirely sure about the designations. But she gets recruited by an Italian priest to go across the ocean to this old 1900s kind of cathedral where she gets to become really enveloped in a new or slightly more strict way of this convent. Basically, she gets recruited into this Italian convent, and we know in the beginning of the movie, right off the bat, there's something funky going on with this convent. Like, shit's getting real and scary. So it's a little bit of Suspiria in that way, that sort of fish out of water coming to a new place to see what evil lurks behind the doors. And that's essentially what the movie is. It's, I wouldn't say nunsploitation, because that brings to mind this one Spanish horror movie I saw. Oh, God. Satanic Pandemonium, I think. Basically, it was one where the devil was, like, pretending to be a nun, and she was having, like, hot, salacious lesbian nun sex with the other nun in the movie, and, yeah, that is not what this movie is at all. I want you to kind of brush that out of your minds. This is not Euphoria, naked Sydney Sweeney. This is very much in the vein of something like Suspiria. Some people have described this as Rosemary's Baby. With good reason. I mean, the crux of this, after she goes to the Italian convent, she finds out that she's pregnant. I mean, she's a nun. She's devoted to her vows, so chastity is one of them. She hasn't had sex with anybody. She's a virgin, but she's pregnant. And so that's where the Immaculate comes from. It's Immaculate Conception. And that's, you know, while she's pregnant, she starts uncovering the mysteries of this convent, of this cathedral, and we're figuring out what the fuck is absolutely going on. So let me give you a little bit more of a teaser of what this feels like by playing the trailer for you all.
I know God saved me for a reason, but I guess I'm still searching for what that reason is.
Too much blood of Christ.
It's a miracle. You are with child.
Out of all the women in the world,
why did he choose me?
How can we trust what's inside you?
Suffering is love.
No one ever
suffering. Suffering. Suffering is love.
Big spooky. The release of this movie, alongside the release of a movie that's going to come out at on Friday, the first Omen. It's an interesting time to be, you know, a woman who's dealing with the birth of something against the backdrop of religious evil. Sydney Sweeney in this movie and Nell Tiger-Free in the first Omen. That movie I've actually heard pretty decent reviews for too. I've heard people are actually really, really digging that. So, and that was a movie where it's a prequel to the original Omen movie from 1976, a movie I really, really enjoy. I think that movie just hits that sweet spot of like slightly absurd, like absurd concept played as serious and as dramatically potent as possible. I mean, once you get Gregory Peck to be the dad whose son might be the Antichrist, you know, that shit gets for real. And the 70s is always, you know, a great decade to have be the backdrop of some, like, really fucked up, you know, medieval carnage from the past. But that one being a prequel, I thought it was just kind of be this kind of, you know, like The Exorcist Believer or like The Omen from 2006, you know, just something that was made to make a cheap buck off of a name. But all the reviews for the first Omen are telling me that it's going to be pretty solid. So I'm going to keep my eyes and ears out for that. I don't know if I'm going to be able to catch that right away due to money constraints, but shit, whenever I get a chance, you know, that Monkey Man's coming out this weekend. I'm excited for that. What else is coming out? I've been hearing good things about Challengers too. The new Luca Guadagnino tennis menage a trois or like Three's Company style drama. You know, I've heard that thing's going to be good too. So good weekend. I've been hearing some good things about Godzilla as well. But anyway, back to Immaculate. I think I'm getting lost because I don't really want to say. I'm not the biggest fan of this movie, and I think it's because when I first started watching it, I had the hype train on blast. I really do think this is an example of marketing kind of getting the best of me. This movie was distributed by Neon, who's known for making for distributing fucked up movies like Infinity Pool. I really like that Brandon Cronenberg fucked up movie. A lot of art housey kind of stuff. You know, Portrait of a Lady on Fire dropped on this movie. On this, and I think Parasite was actually released or distributed internationally by Neon. They're kind of like A24 adjacent, so to speak. I mean, hell, even the new horror movie starring Hunter Schafer, Cuckoo, is coming out on their label too. So they've gotten a reputation for being the sort of indie movie label. If your movie is on there, it's because it's a little headier than the rest. You know, the movies that I got trailers for before Immaculate was stuff like Sony Pictures' Tarot, which is just like jump scare with teenagers. And they've got Jacob Batalon from Spider-Man No Way Home, and I think they've got one of the new Mean Girls in that film, too. But it's, you know, tarot cards and jump scares galore. And then I've got one, what was that movie? Imaginary, I think I got the trailer for. Was it Imaginary? Something like that. I got a couple trailers for a bunch of jump scare flicks, and then randomly I'd get one for, like, Sasquatch Sunset, because that's an indie comedy about a tribe of Bigfoot, a family of Bigfoot people that have like Jesse Eisenberg and Riley Keough in the cast. So it's like indie darlings doing weird indie shit. And that's kind of what this movie is marketed to. But I found the actual movie itself to be more resemblant of something that you'd see in just like a jump scare land. Now, I feel like a major studio, like Screen Gems, would have dropped something like this. It's structured that way. And really, what kind of, I guess, breaks it apart from the rest is mostly in the production design. I think the castle that they've got Sydney Sweeney, you know, wobbling around is really, like, cool location to find. You know, there's a extended scenes in like these catacombs, and there's this sort of where to the location. You know, this isn't, despite the movie taking place in the 21st century, once Cecilia, the name of Sydney Sweeney's character, once she arrives in Italy, it does feel like she's traveled back in time a little bit. And it's not just because of the nuns, and it really just is the architecture, the way they're living feels old. You can kind of see the dust on anything, on everything, even though the nuns try their best to clean meticulously. I think it also helps that this is specifically an environment for nuns who are kind of like on hospice. Like, their specific convent is meant for nuns who are on the last stage of life, so they're trying to make the end of life care as like calming as possible. And so there is really like an antiquated feel to the whole thing. Love those locations. It creates a lot of opportunities for candlelight to take over and give everything a sort of texture that feels like, you know, if you blow on a piece of, if you blow on a prop, you're just going to get a cloud of dust in the air. It feels more, and I guess because as an American, I don't see these type of cathedrals often. You know, back when I was going to church as a kid, it was mostly just regular buildings. You know, I didn't go to massive cathedrals or like these mega churches that are state of the art because of all the tithes and the, you know, big piles of money that get pulled in. This feels like whenever you're talking about the Son of God or you're talking about these religious traditions, they carry weight behind them because the buildings have that weight. And so that piece I thought was stellar. Whenever I was talking about the catacombs, they talk about these things and they look like they're fucked up. You know, they look like they've been around a while. And so when Sydney Sweeney is eventually like rolling around there at some point in the movie, it does feel like you're crawling in a space where, you know, the earth has sort of like swallowed the old world. And you're seeing pieces of it that maybe still kind of refuse to completely sink under the surface and just get washed away by time. And that helps with a movie that's trying to impose on its lead character the notion of, you know, this Immaculate Conception being God's will. But then there's also the contrast of everything a horror movie does, where it does feel slowly throughout the movie like Sydney Sweeney is having these people or like having these forces just stalk her and watch from a distance. There's the typical sort of like scares of like some shadow standing in the corner. You turn on the light and then they're gone. Or there's the jump scare from somebody who's not supposed to be there in that moment. And all of this in the sound work just, again, classic jump scare, like big sound, big jolts. That work ends up creating an environment that leads to a sense of paranoia. And for the most part, the actual scares are, you know, are really nothing without the startle of the sound work to go with it. I found where it was most effective was when that was a subtler approach. When you have conversations with people like the priest or some of the nuns, where just them looking at Cecilia the wrong way, or the way they talk about something in a vague manner of speaking, kind of gives this eerie feeling like they know more than they're letting on, and you know that they are making that choice deliberately to hide something from you. So again, creating that level of paranoia, and especially when, you know, she gets more and more pregnant and more doubt starts creeping in, that leads to sort of like the way the movie is starting to ramp up. I thought the beginning had like a solid bit of buildup, and it also helps that she has another character, another nun. I forget the nun's name. Let me look that up right quick. But she's the more rebellious one. Her backstory was actually pretty interesting. I wish they would have maybe got into, I don't know how you can get into that a little bit more. Actually, I know how you could, because whenever Sydney Sweeney talks about her backstory, it actually leads to one of the more effective moments in the film as far as it being, like, scary and creepy. They're able to sort of take that scene of her talking about, you know, what led her to really want to come all the way to Italy from America, and that ended up being a really good piece of just, like, getting me inside of her head, and B, being an effective, creepy moment. And I wish they would have done something similar with this character, Sister Gwen, who's played by Benedetta Porcaroli. She is one of the newer nuns, or she's been there for a while, but she's the one that kind of takes Cecilia under her wing. There's another sister, Sister Isabel, played by, and forgive me if I fuck up these Italian names, Giulia Heathfield Di Renzi. As soon as Cecilia gets inside, you know, 1 foot inside this convent, Sister Isabel is just staring her down like she can't fucking stand her. Like, oh God, I gotta go deal with this lady again. It's very, it starts out giving very much Emily Blunt in The Devil Wears Prada, that kind of side eye and just immediately trying to belittle her just with the eyesight. So Cecilia is using Gwen as sort of like someone to show her the ropes, and this is a person who has a backstory that's different than most nuns, and that leads her to be a bit more rebellious and such, and so she ends up helping be the catalyst for more doubt to creep into Cecilia's mind, and that build-up, I think, works pretty well. You know, we're still getting some scares that are, you know, kind of run-of-the-mill, and then the movie kind of jumps and really goes to 1,000. And I thought, okay, this is an interesting approach, because at one point I thought, okay, this cannot be the end of the movie. Like, I can't have watched enough movie to get to the point where I am and where I think the climax is that we're ready to go down. And it turns out that I really do think this movie blows its load too early. When it starts to get into big reveals and understanding what's going on and why it's going on, I thought that at that point, the emotional impact was so strong that I was going to ride down into sort of the typical horror movie ending. And yet, I found that there was just way more time that was left in the film to kind of ruminate. And in a strange way, because they blow their loads so early, what's left just happens to be a horror ending that carries a lot of the same kind of tropes as this never-ending chase through a darkened space, or, you know, the villain pontificating about the reasons that they're doing stuff for so long. And I just found myself thinking, huh, this movie is kind of tame. And the marketing clearly is not doing that. The marketing's leaning on these Twitter comments, which I can't find the original post for anymore. It's making me think some of them might be fabricated. Let's not take that as like my grand indictment of the movie, but at the same time, it's a little weird. Christian Twitter calling this thing blasphemous, and this is so dangerous, and it's like horrific, and how dare you, and blah blah blah. It's that high and mighty, holier than that, oh, criticism. That, of course, you know, ever since the era of like William Castle has only enticed people to go see a movie. I mean, now the newest bit is that tomorrow on April 3rd. All the theater tickets are going to be, if you want to buy a ticket for Immaculate, all the tickets are going to be $6.66. Ooh, spooky. And they've got videos of Sydney Sweeney, you know, sharing the movie with her grandma and her father and having them react and be startled by the audacity of what they've seen. And recently they've also had Sydney Sweeney host the screening of Immaculate for pastors. And that stuff really just feels like a way to use the weight of religious imagery, the immediate sort of shorthand for people to feel a type of way. You know, you look at a priest's robe, you look at a pastor, you look at the cross, and based on your experiences with religion, you're going to feel some emotions based off those experiences that immediately trigger you into either you feeling comfortable or you feeling a little bit disturbed or perturbed, maybe by, you know, if you've had a negative relationship with religion or a positive relationship with religion. And so using that religious imagery in order to immediately conjure some sense of tension, using something that, like the Mother Mary, which is one of the most prominent symbols of Catholicism, and sort of like twisting that on its head. You know, it's like whenever you see a metal band flip the cross upside down, and oh, that's supposed to be really scary, and what a blasphemous perversion of an otherwise holy symbol. It's that sort of attention and rise that you get out of people that the marketing's showing with this movie. And I noticed the scares were doing that as well. And I noticed the actual storytelling was doing so too. I found that so much of what makes this movie tick really is just about putting religious imagery up on screen, giving it a dark bend and like a blood and a scary horror movie score. And that sort of shorthand based on people's experiences with religion being the bulk of the work. You know, some people have called this movie a takedown of Catholicism, and I found that to be such a surface level thing. When you find out, I guess, the horror movie reason why Sydney Sweeney, Cecilia, has had this Immaculate Conception, you know, I found like that plot is so over the top, and it's so obviously antithetical to what religious tenements are there, that to call it a takedown of Catholicism or to call it a critique of Catholicism and having blind faith and sort of like a cult-like exploration of what religion makes people do, I can't go with you there. I can go with you in the sense that this is kind of like watching a Stephen King movie where these people are caricatures of religious figures. But even then, Stephen King's caricatures had a basis in truth. You know, some these are caricatures, but religious people have engaged in certain actions. So it is easier for someone who is a Catholic or who is religious or who does believe in Christianity to see a little bit of themselves or at least people they know within those characters. And in this movie, it goes so far out that I couldn't see any Christian or Catholic really seeing themselves in these people. Like, this is a movie where the villains are wolves in sheep's clothing, and it's so easy for somebody to say, oh, that's not us. You know, that's these people. You know, the idea of someone perverting, you know, what the truth of religion should be is not new and shouldn't be treated as new. And just because this movie has some little nuggets that do criticize real life things with Catholicism, I mean, the easiest low-hanging fruit of, you know, priests engaging in sexual abuse and the cover-up of those abuses, that gets a throwaway line in this movie. And it's something that Cecilia refutes in, like, record time. That's the easiest low-hanging fruit to go for as far as, like, things to criticize about the church, and yet the movie doesn't really go there. And it makes me think that, no, this really doesn't have satire in its mind. I really do think it's just got a cool concept, a kind of like creep show-esque, you know, I would expect this kind of concept to appear in like an anthology horror movie, not necessarily something that has the full weight behind it. I will say, though, that I'm a cis dude who has never been pregnant, and I've noticed that some reviews from women have talked about how Cecilia as a character and the things she undergoes makes them feel on a visceral nature. And I will say that there are portions of this movie where if you have a uterus and you have the capability to be pregnant and to understand what it's like to have your body undergo things that other people feel entitled to, whether comment on or take action on, that plays differently. And that experience must be fucking terrifying. And there are moments in this movie where it does go there. And I guess there's a trigger warning that I can have too for people who've had really bad birth experiences. There's some shit that goes down, and I won't say it's, again, I guess the reputation of something like having Neon as a distributor means that I would expect this to be like really bloody or really visceral or fucked up. And there's some gory moments on here. This is a rated R movie, but I will say in the pantheon of rated R horror movies, this doesn't touch half of the shit that has come out over the last 10 couple years. But even then, I would say there's some scenes related to birth, related to difficulty with that kind of experience that can, you know, fuck some folks up. I also have a weird perspective on this because my wife gave birth to our daughter, and our daughter came out foot first. It's an image that I will have seared into my skull until the day I die. See, the very first thing I see of my daughter are her feet. Her toes, specifically. And that was a really scary birth experience. So there are moments when Sweeney, who isn't a mother, has to act that way. And I'm going to just chalk this up to my prejudice. I don't think the performance goes hard enough. I do think that as violent, as raw, as loud as this performance can get, my experience is that whatever noises, faces, contorted expressions my wife made during birth do not even light a candle to this. Like, this movie doesn't even light a candle to that. And that's one of the things that I've noticed. The people who really love this movie are really praising the ending scenes, the more difficult birth-related scenes. And again, I'm going to chalk it up to my personal experience, but man, you really needed to go hardcore. And I just think it missed the mark. Or at least it missed my mark. I don't know. That's my interpretation of the scenes. Because again, the shit that I saw my wife do, she was possessed. She was driven by something that I cannot explain. I've never seen in a human being before. And it scared me. And Sydney Sweeney just doesn't scare me. I noticed, let's talk about her performance because it's getting praised a lot too. I notice a little bit of a monotone with her, and it's funny because I get accused of that all the time, and I do have a monotone, but, you know, whatever. Whenever she speaks, sometimes her dialogue doesn't quite hit like you think it should, but Sweeney's always been best when using the eyes and using the shock on her face to, you know, react to something. She always has this really great way of just portraying innocence in all forms. And her being a nun and being sort of like wide-eyed and like, you know, doe-eyed and like, you know, have a cherubic kind of face that makes you like her because she's genuinely really sweet and not want anything to hurt her. You know, that kind of face, whenever it's experiencing some fucked up shit, that's a face you know, you want to follow till the end. And she's good with that. And I like when she's engaging more of like the physical sides of her performance. You know, there's a scene where she has to run. It's a horror movie. You got to run for your life. When she's run, she's fucking booking it. And those knees are moving and her body's like just thrushing for it, especially being pregnant. You know, playing that and knowing, again, from experience, how people move. She's fucking booking it. And I gotta commit, that's a physical type of performance that's tough to pull off. And, you know, Sweeney is the name to associate with this. She took on the project. The story goes that she auditioned for it 10 years ago in 2014. And the movie died in development hell. It just didn't get off the ground at all. And then Sweeney is so driven by wanting to do the movie, excuse me, and take on the role that she sticks with it after she gains some clout in Hollywood, you know, post Euphoria and White Lotus, post Anyone But You, you know, creating a relationship with studios, becoming like her own producer, putting her producer cap on, starting her production company with her husband in 50-50, or her fiance, pardon me, I don't think they're married yet, in 50-50 films. Then she comes back, brings the script from the dead, brings in director Michael Moen, who she worked with on the 2021 movie The Voyeurs, brings them on, rewrites the script, you know, puts on a producer cap. She goes on location scouting. She deals with casting. She's working in it. So she basically brings this thing back from the dead 10 years later to, you know, finally make it to theaters. And I think the thing that I, after hearing that story, this movie came out my most anticipated because that's a movie that you are not cynical for. And I don't believe her performance is cynical. And yet I find that some of the ways the movie is directed and some of the ways it goes about scaring you and some of the, you know, there's weird choices like characters that show up in the beginning of the movie that don't really make it towards the end. And these images that are just surreal, but really don't linger. And so they don't never really pay off. They kind of just feel like haunted house attractions. I felt like those kind of choices were cynical, and it just clashed for me. I'm not going to shit on Sweeney, and really I'm not going to shit on Moen for that either. I mean, it's a horror movie. There are genre tropes for a reason, but I just wish there were a better balance of how they were portrayed, and maybe to a grander effect, like what each choice means when you layer it on top of itself. I would appreciate a more cohesive, heavier hitting stack of choices. It also makes me think that if this is a script that comes from 2014, the references that I was bringing to this, you know, in a post Robert Eggers, Ari Aster, and Jordan Peele world, you know, where does a script like this fit? You know, I feel like if this were to release back when Sweeney first auditioned for it, it would hit a little harder because, you know, those three directors that I mentioned, and now I'm thinking of them as like the big three, all of, you know, Kendrick, J. Cole, and Drake, and just kind of wondering how that would fit. I don't know. Let me know. Which member of the big three do you think Eggers, Aster, and Peele relate to? Kind of interested to hear what y'all think of that. But in a world where those guys have really taken specifically mainstream like, not necessarily insensibility, but people have heard of Hereditary. People have heard of The Witch, and people have, you know, obviously with the Oscars buzz with Get Out, you know, those movies were part of a conversation. Even when you talked about, when you talk about fucked up horror movies, Midsommar is in that list of like recent movies that really fucked with people. And the way that Peele has been able to build his brand on sort of the mysteries of Us and Nope, you know, they're taking horror and moving it into a wider conversation without sacrificing their sort of artistic flair. And some of those movies get really fucking intense in ways that are genuinely shocking and ways that are relentless. And I found like this movie was sort of that midpoint where they're taking some risks in the sort of bluntness with which they'll approach the horror, and some of the violence is getting a little bit there. But I found that sort of that jump scare laden tricks that keep returning throughout the movie remind me of stuff that I saw in like the first Ouija or Annabelle or even some of the earlier horror movies that were making it to, that were like big studio movies. The PG-13 style horror movies that are like a dime a dozen and would pop up every so often just to, you know, be shot for $5 million, make a quick 15, and then we dip. You know, it's the kind of stuff that Blumhouse made their bread and butter on, or at least that was associated with the Blumhouse ripoffs. I won't say like Insidious is stuff like that, or maybe some of the lesser known Blumhouses, like the Jeff Wadlow directed stuff, still resembles that kind of like cheap jump scare laden horror movie that's sort of has like a decent concept, but is never really, you know, executed on it well outside of just like a surface level reading. I felt Immaculate has some of that, but I also feel like Immaculate has some ambition leaning towards, you know, the way that Sweeney's character is sort of that avatar of people with uteruses, uteri, whom are dealing with an increasingly hostile environment. And you could look at the way that people talk about her pregnant body and the baby that's inside and completely avoid her and what she feels and thinks as, you know, something more resembling of the times. You know, in a post, I hate to say this, I really do hate to say this, in a post-Roe world, you know, a movie like this rings with a really sad tone. And it's like, damn, you know, this feels medieval. And I guess relating it back to religion and sort of the type of communities with which would have a problem with something, you know, like a pregnancy that's gone wrong or a pregnancy that shouldn't be, that type of thing. Seeing that in 2024 have so much resonance and so much, you know, life in the discussion is really fucking disturbing. Maybe that's just our American sensibilities, but yeah, that's, it's kind of fucking me up a little bit. But for what else, finish off with Immaculate, because I don't want to go on for too long, is that I think it is not, I'm going to say that I don't like it, because I really wasn't into the jump scares, and I kind of felt like the way the movie went along was a little plodding, and for as beautiful as the architecture is, and some of the costuming work is really, really stunning. Like that, there's an image in the trailer of Sydney Sweeney dressed in a big headdress with a veil on, and she's crying a la Florence Pugh in Midsommar, and that shot is fucking cool. And some of the ending is pretty gnarly, and there's a couple jokes in there that I actually kind of like. Some situational jokes at the end of the movie that I thought were really funny. And I thought her performance was fine. But ultimately, yeah, I'm going to leave Immaculate as sort of like a C-grade movie for me. And I hope that delivers the right expectation, because if you do have that sort of like gut connection to what Cecilia, the character, is feeling, I think you'll like it more. And if you're looking for something that's really going to blow your mind and like be the next great horror movie, I think maybe it's good to temper those expectations just a little bit. I think there's enough genre tropiness going on that hasn't really been lifted beyond sort of like cheap scares, and like the actual images that you see that are going to scare you, I don't think are as intense or as memorable as it could be. And I think for a movie that was revived from development hell, it should come out the gate swinging a lot harder than it did. I'll say it did for the marketing. I admire Sweeney intensely for being another example of young Hollywood that is not content with merely just acting in front of the camera, but really taking more ownership of their projects. You know, this comes on the heels of Timothée Chalamet signing a first look deal with Warner Brothers to be their kind of studio boy and do the same thing and develop his pictures. And, you know, I like seeing that the younger stars are they say the age of the movie stars is dead. And I think it's just evolving. You know, I think it's just evolving, and I appreciate the way that it's evolving. Let's see. I'm going to text my wife that the baby is crying. Can't get through a podcast without kids crying. Okay, she's already over there. So yeah, I think it's time to wrap this fucker up. If you want to see Immaculate's in theaters. I would say go to the theater to see it. Go see it with a good audience, maybe with a couple of friends. I was there. I saw a couple teenage, college-age girls there, and they seemed to have a really good time with it. So, hey, if you want a good time to get spooked at the movies, I could say you'll do a lot worse, but I'll also say you could do a lot better. Let me leave it at that. All right, friends, thank you very much for listening to another episode of The Movies. I appreciate it greatly. If you'd like to follow me, please do so on Twitter at @themovies_pod. Please rate and review the show. If you're on Spotify, rate it honestly. If you're on Apple, rate it honestly. Leave me a review. I'll read the reviews if you leave me them on Apple Podcasts. So please do so if you like your boy, if you don't like your boy, what have you. Tell me what you thought of Immaculate if you saw it. I'll have a post on Twitter that coincides with this, and you could just let me know what you think of the movie. I kind of want to see what the broader spectrum of reactions is to this thing. I've only had maybe 5 or 6 so far, so I kind of want to see what people are talking about with this thing. And yeah, I'm going to leave y'all with a song. Could not hear this woman's name in the movie without thinking of this band. So this is a song called Saint Cecilia by the band Foo Fighters off of their Saint Cecilia EP, recorded at the Saint Cecilia House in Austin, Texas. This is a banger of a song, banger of an EP from one of my favorite bands of all time. So I figure it's good to close on that. My friends, please, as I always say, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and take care of the movies. I'll see you around. There ain't no secrets anymore. My name's been hanging on the hook outside your door. Just an old